Come be a part of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics with your host, Dr. Ed Holliday. Hear the voices of liberty speaking all across America. Doc Holliday provides thought-provoking interviews and commentary about the issues and actions that are afflicting this country and what we need to do to get America back on track. Get fired up. Get inspired. Get on board with Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics right now.
And here we go.
Good afternoon, Doc Holliday. Glad to be with you. Glad to be with your listeners.
And those are words coming from the late Congressman Alan Nunley, 1st District of Mississippi. And he's been a friend of this show. He's been on and we've interviewed him a couple of times, and he succumbed to cancer. He was discovered cancer about 9 months ago, and treatment for a tumor, removal and surgery, and he had a stroke. He was fighting, trying to come back from stroke, but the cancer finally came back. He has passed away. In memory of Alan Nunley, U.S. Representative Alan Nunley, we're going to pay a tribute to him on the last half of this show. And I want you to listen to that. We'll play an interview that we did, and we'll also play a clip from when he was on the floor of the House of Representatives with a passion, talking about freedom of religion and what was going on with the Obama administration. So we're going to play that, and we keep his family in our prayers. I know it was a tough time for them, painful time, but we're going to keep them lifted up in our prayers, and I hope you listen to the tribute on the second half of the show. Before we get there, I want to tell you that I'm glad to have you. Welcome to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You're listening to us right here on webtalkradio.net. That's webtalkradio.net. And we're glad you're listening to us because we're growing because of you. You're telling your friends and neighbors. We continue to grow. We continue to make an impact on this nation, the United States of America. If we're going to survive and thrive, we got to turn some things around, and that's what you and I are working together, making that happen. So what do we got? Before we get to the tribute to U.S. Congressman Alan Nunley, we got to talk about some international things. We've been a while since we've looked at the international picture. So today, I got something to tell you about what Vladimir Putin's doing that I bet you have not heard about. It's not making the news, but it's very important to know what's going on in this world, especially the Middle East. And Vladimir Putin is putting his hands on a place that, well, you need to listen. It'll be a couple minutes. We'll get to that. Before we do that, I got a clip from a presidential candidate, that possible presidential candidate, I should say, and it's Marco Rubio. And you can tell he's been really groomed on the international affairs, because he's going to talk about Iran and what's going on with deals, negotiations with Iran. And I want you to hear his voice. I want you to understand this could be our next president. Will he be? You remember we've talked about that in a past program with Joshua Bernstein, and he thought that Scott Walker could be it. We don't know, and that's why we are looking at each week talking something about what's going on in this race for the 2016 Republican nominee. It is going to go back and forth. We want you to be informed. That's one reason you're listening to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. So let me play this clip for you from the Hugh Hewitt Show with Senator Marco Rubio.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me back.
Yesterday on Meet the Press, Secretary of State Kerry was engaged by Chuck Todd and spoke about Iran and gave this brief but very firm timetable.
But if we're not able to make the fundamental decisions that have to be made over the course of the next weeks, literally, I think it would be impossible to extend. I don't think we would want to extend at that point.
Now, Senator Rubio, John Bolton was just on saying, look, they're telegraphing a deal. The deal's all but done. What do you make of Secretary of State Kerry's appearance and this deal that is in the offing?
Well, we'd like to know the details of it. I think that's important. It's one of the reasons why I think congressional approval is so important. So that's the first thing I'd like to, you know, focus in on. But look, I don't know what kind of deal they keep talking about. The only deal that I believe is acceptable with Iran is that they abandon their nuclear enrichment program. If they want to have nuclear energy, which, by the way, an oil-rich country doesn't need, but if they want it, then they can have it the way South Korea gets it, the way Japan gets it, the way most of the world gets it, and that is they enrich and reprocess abroad, and then it's shipped in, and they put it in their fuel rods, and they use that to power their country. There's no need to have an enrichment capability unless you intend to one day weaponize the program. And meanwhile, here's the other thing, if you don't believe that, why would they continue to develop long-range rockets? The only reason why you develop long-range rockets, intercontinental missiles, which is what they're trying to get to, is in order to put a nuclear warhead on it. You don't use that for conventional purposes. So, again, I just don't know why they don't see that. Maybe they think they're trying to buy themselves some time, but to me it's an unacceptable risk to have a radical Shia cleric, the supreme leader of Iran, someone who has openly said and believes that his faith compels him to trigger an apocalyptic showdown with the non-Islamic world. Why we would ever want him to have access to nuclear technology?
Now, I agree with Marco Rubio. Senator Rubio is telling you in simple language that Iran does not need, it really doesn't even need to have any kind of nuclear program for energy. But if they do, if they proceed down that road, then they must do like South Korea, other countries like Japan, who don't have to enrich their own uranium right there. They don't. If they do, that means someday they're going to want to make a nuclear bomb. And this administration that is dealing and has been extending deadline after deadline with the country of Iran, somehow I don't trust them with these negotiations. Do you? Well, Senator Marco Rubio really explained it in simple, concise terms. He's crisp. I think he's getting his game face on to be a presidential candidate. And I think he's doing a good job. And this is the thing I want you to know, our listeners. It is good to have so many young, fresh, new Republican potential candidates for president. Now, there's only going to be one Republican nominee in 2016. But the journey to get there is going to sharpen the party. The journey to get there is going to help us see what the future of the Republican Party should be. Is it going to be more conservative? Is it going to be more moderate? Is it going to be milk toast type of establishment? Or is it going to have some strength and backbone to stand up for conservative principles? And that's why it is exciting to see these things starting to develop. And I wanted you to know that we're going to keep up with it right here at Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. And you're going to hear things here you won't hear anywhere else. And there's something very important that we went over about Iran, the president's negotiations with Iran, and what Marco Rubio thought about it. So what else? I told you there's something going on in the world that really concerns me, and you're not hearing about it on any media, but I'm going to tell you about it right after you listen to this.
Slip sliding away, slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away.
Slip sliding away, Paul Simon. I have to tell you, American power, American influence, American ingenuity when it comes to foreign policy, superpower, has helped control the world and keep it from falling apart as far as nation against nation. We can't be policemen, but by golly, we need to exert power in important regions of the world where it counts. What am I talking about? Vladimir Putin is flaunting in the face of the United States of America some power. And why we are letting him get away with it is really driving me crazy. Why doesn't someone in Washington look and say, this administration, you are failing the American people in the future of our children and grandchildren? And what am I talking about? Well, there was an article that came out last week. It's from Benny Avney. It is titled, Losing Egypt. Putin exploits Obama's slaps at U.S. ally. You know, not only does President Obama mock the president or the prime minister of Israel, Netanyahu, I mean, there's everybody knew they didn't get along, but it looks like they're going to have almost a fist fight. I mean, invite Netanyahu to a joint session of Congress to speak, our best ally in the Middle East, and the president is upset and he's putting pressure on Democrats not to show their face and even asking the Black Caucus to boycott that out of their love for Obama and his seemingly, what do you call it, his unwont to show any accommodation to Netanyahu and the nation of Israel in so many ways. And there's another ally, Egypt. It seems like President Obama, ever since the Muslim Brotherhood got kicked out of Egypt by over 30 million Egyptians protesting all at once one day, 30 million. Can you imagine that? They came out and said, we're tired of the Muslim Brotherhood. And they got rid of them. And who was elected? Well, we had, now he's president, President Fattah al-Sisi. And Sisi has thrown the Muslim Brotherhood out. Who was he? Well, he's a man that was educated in military training and educated in colleges here in the United States of America. He's wanted to be an ally with the United States and help do what? He wants to fight ISIS. He wants to fight Islamist extremism. And he's saying Islam has to come to the table and see what's wrong and get rid of the extremism. He's the one standing up, and he's not afraid, him being a Muslim himself, saying we have Islamist terrorists, and our president of the United States will not say it himself. He went on to talk about in his article, it was not all pomp and circumstance about Russia. They're doing a lot of business with Arabs all over it. Now, they've had connections during the Cold War. Egypt and the Soviet Union worked together way back in the Eisenhower days. And the British, it's a long history. We won't go into that. But we had developed friendships with Egypt, starting with Jimmy Carter and overtures there when they had been in the Soviet lineup. And we have just cultivated them, even let them make the Abrams tank in Egypt. That's what America has done. That's why we have been an ally with Egypt ever since Jimmy Carter helped broker the Israeli-Egyptian peace treaty. And that has helped keep peace in the Middle East. There has not been a war, an all-out war of the Arab neighbors against Israel since that peace agreement. And yet, this president, President Obama, and this administration is just slapping the fool out of who used to be our friend Egypt. What is it they don't like? Well, I'll tell you, what always happened. Now Egypt is, they're spending $4.5 billion last year. Trade, I'm talking about they traded with Russia. $4.5 billion. And Putin went down there and he got off the plane. And he gave one of the Russian the rifles, the weapon that is proudly made in Russia, handed it to Sisi. And then they put together a $3 billion deal that Russian attack helicopters and MiG-29 fighter jets. We could be selling this equipment to Egypt. Maybe we don't need to. But why are we letting Russia get in and become the ally of Egypt as Obama pouts like a four-year-old in a corner because the Muslim Brotherhood was kicked out? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense for the future. It said on Tuesday, a couple weeks ago, Egypt and Russia inked together an agreement for Russia to build Egypt's first nuclear power plant. Russia's going to put nuclear power in all the Middle East, it looks like. But, you know, we can't even work out an agreement with Iran. We got Russia coming in behind our backs, building a nuclear plant, a first nuclear power plant in Egypt. And where is that reset button that Hillary Clinton punched? Well, she punched the reset button, and boy, did it ever reset. Putin has been playing this administration like a piano. I've talked about it before. And this is the time we talk about oil, the price of oil going down. It's sinking the Russian economy. Russia invaded Crimea. We put sanctions on them. And everybody's saying, boy, this administration is putting Putin in a headlock. Like there's some wrestlers. Can you see him on a wrestling match? And everybody's laughing because Barack Obama has Putin in a headlock. He doesn't have Putin in a headlock. Putin is laughing at him. He can flip him over and whoop him any time, it seems like, when it comes to foreign policy, because he's doing that. He is in the process of making an ally out of Egypt because Barack Obama's still sulking that the Muslim Brotherhood got kicked out and al-Sisi is now president, elected, I might say, the elected president of the nation of Egypt. Well, was it all real quick when all of a sudden that President Sisi of Egypt became the Kremlin's best friend is what was in the article. And they said the ex-general rose up the ranks of an Egyptian army that was almost exclusively backed by America. And Sisi was even a fellow at the U.S. Army War College in the early 1990s. And basically said, to make the point, that President Obama, one of the things he did, he suspended for a while the annual $1.5 billion U.S. aid package to Egypt ever since Jimmy Carter signed the peace agreement. America has pushed aid into Egypt to keep our friendship there. Is that good or bad? All I know is it was suspended because al-Sisi was elected president. Muslim Brotherhood was kicked out. Now, I'm not making Sisi, and in the article they said, you know, there's no doubt he is no Thomas Jefferson, President Sisi. It's been hard on opponents and critics ever since seizing power in 2013 in a move widely described as a military coup. Was it? He was elected, but people wanted the Muslim Brotherhood out. So we're getting down to the nitty-gritty. What is Doc Holliday talking about? I'm saying we have got to take note of what Vladimir Putin is doing across the world. He's laying the groundwork for more and more influence. He wants to be like the Soviet Union of old. He doesn't have the economic power, but he's got some. He's going in wherever there's a vacuum where this president has backed up and said, we're going to lead from behind. Putin is marching in just like he did in Crimea, and the reason there's fighting in Ukraine now. He sees the vacuum, the lack of American leadership, and it's about time somebody in Congress stood up. It is the foreign policy. It's the responsibility of the administration. But please, people in Congress, our congressmen, men and women in the Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives, somebody start standing up and saying our foreign policy is falling into a vacuum. The reset by Hillary Clinton with Russia has not worked. It's time for something different. Can we wait for another president to be elected? Somebody put some pressure on his White House to get some sense into their foreign policy. So that's what Doc Holliday wanted to tell you about. It's very important. You're not hearing it anywhere else. And that's why you're listening to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. Because, frankly, we're going to get you some stories you don't hear anywhere else. And now I got to remind you, you are listening. The Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. This is a special show, special week, because of the passing of a good friend of this show, and that's U.S. Representative Alan Nunley. 56 years old, young man, elected in 2010 with the Tea Party wave. He went in, the conservative wave that went into the House and switched it from Nancy Pelosi being the Speaker of the House to John Boehner. But I have to say, that Representative Alan Nunley finished life on top. He saved his very best to the end, his last 5 years dedicated to the first district, congressional district of Mississippi, the people he loved, the land he loved. And I can tell you, I know him. He was a very strong family man, very strong church man. He knew what was going to happen when he died. He's ready for the world beyond this earth. And I think he was a good and faithful servant. And I appreciate and honor him for the dedication to the first congressional district of Mississippi and to the United States of America. He is a patriot, and we will miss him. I want to remind you, you're listening to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You're listening to us right here on webtalkradio.net. That's webtalkradio.net. Hey, if you want the book, you can go to my website. Go to the front page, click on. You can get the book called Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. I do want to take this moment. Some of you are thinking, oh, last week I said we'd have our best-selling author, Jonathan Kahn. Well, Jonathan's interview is coming up because of the passing of Representative Alan Nunley. We are going to push that into next week. So next week we will have the best-selling author of The Harbinger and now The Mystery of the Shemitah, New York Times best-selling author, Jonathan Kahn, will be having his interview next week. So be sure to put that on your calendar. And now the life and legacy of United States House of Representatives Alan Nunley, 1st District of Mississippi. And we will miss him. But here is a clip on this radio show with Doc Holliday a couple years ago. And then we're going to play a clip of him in the United States House on the floor. So, all right, on Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, today we have from the 1st Congressional District of Mississippi, Congressman Alan Nunley. Welcome to the show, Congressman.
Well, good afternoon, Doc Holliday. Glad to be with you. Glad to be with your listeners.
Well, we're glad to have you on, and we'll just get right to the point because a lot of things going on in D.C. And question one, has Obamacare, can it be stopped? Has it left the station?
Well, it left the station, but the good thing about our country is that we have a country that rests on the shoulders of we the people. It does not rest on the shoulders of we the Supreme Court. It does not rest on the shoulders of we the Congress. And I honestly believe that the final determiner on Obamacare is going to be the American people expressing their outrage at the polls on November the 6th.
So November 6th, if it can be stopped, it has to be then.
I think it does. I think that's our one shot at it. If we go another 2 years and don't repeal Obamacare, then I think it may become entrenched. But if the American people will speak loudly enough in November, continue a House of Representatives that has expressed over 30 times our outrage.
Right.
And then give us a United States Senate that will repeal Obamacare and give us a president that will sign it into law. We can get it off the books and then start anew on health care reform in this nation.
But you do say we do need health care reform. It just doesn't need to be Obamacare.
Well, specifically what I think we need, you know, we've got a very good health care system. Now, I think we've got problems in health care financing, but the delivery of health care is the best in the history of the world. The problem with our system of health care financing is that the patient's not in charge, and we need to start with a system of health care financing where we have patients making decisions. We don't need government bureaucrats, but neither do we need insurance company accountants. We need to put the patient, the consumer, in charge.
Well, I hope what you just said can happen after November 6th, and that's what I think the American people want, so we'll see what happens.
We will have that opportunity to express ourselves collectively. You know, I think the thing that got my attention in the Supreme Court decision, and I wish the court decision had gone a different way, the majority of the Supreme Court said that it is not their job to rule on the merits of a public policy issue, whether that's good or bad public policy. And then they went on to say that the American people make that determination and then have to live with the consequences of their determination. And that's in that Supreme Court decision.
We've talked about that on this show in the past couple of weeks, so I'm glad you brought that out. And hopefully the whole nation is understanding that. It is in the hands of we, the people.
I hope that the American people express outrage at the polls and that we can reverse Obamacare.
Another question, Congressman. President Obama has been exerting a lot of executive powers and some beyond what I feel like the Constitution calls for. For example, his recent decision not to deport illegal immigrants between certain ages. Did he just make Obama's law? Is the executive power able to make laws?
You know, the decision on illegal immigrants is a tough one for us to deal with in terms of what tools do we have available to force him into action. If somebody in the White House wants to do something and the Congress does not want it to happen, we've got a lot of tools at our disposal, if you can get it passed, that prohibit somebody from acting. But this is exactly the opposite. You've got a law on the books, and you've got a chief executive that says, I'm not going to enforce the law. It's really no different in a local community, if the local sheriff says, I'm going to ignore speeding violations on the highway that goes through town. And there are very limited tools that the Congress has to force somebody to act. And so we've looked and looked, trying to see what can we do to force the administration to follow the law.
Have you come up with anything?
No, that's what's been so difficult. And, of course, the fact that we've got Harry Reid in the United States Senate, anything we pass is dead on arrival down there. But we do need to enforce the law. And to have the chief executive officer of the United States just look at the law in the books and say, I know it's there, I'm just going to ignore it. Very, very serious problem.
Well, to me, it diminishes the power of the House of Representatives, and there should be some way to the executive branch read the Constitution, shouldn't it?
Well, we all took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Well, in this case, this is a threat to our republic that is foreign, that has become domestic. And we have people that have come here illegally, and it is a serious threat to our nation. And we need to deal with it. And all we need to do is enforce the law that exists.
And you're talking about taking an oath, and of course the president took an oath to defend the Constitution. Is there any way, can he be sued for what he's done?
Well, in this country you can sue anybody for anything, but now what's going to happen with that lawsuit, I think it's anybody's guess. Who knows?
Now that was from our show right here, Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, and the late Alan Nunley. Now, he was fierce on the floor of the House of Representatives. So I'll play this clip, and we'll end up the show with this.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Religious freedom in America is under attack, not from some outside source, but from within. And if we've learned anything from history, we should have learned that great civilizations are at a greater risk from destroying themselves from within than they ever are endangered from any outside peril. Freedom of religion is one of the cornerstones of our society. In 1789, when James Madison and the rest of the framers of our Constitution were crafting that great document, their genius created the concepts of separation of powers, checks and balances, limited government. However, when that document was presented to the states, the people said that with all of its genius, that document was inadequate. While it outlined a framework for government, it failed to guarantee individual rights. So in order to establish the government of the United States of America as we know it today, our ancestors insisted that our nation adopt the Bill of Rights, 10 amendments to the Constitution that would guarantee rights to every individual. That Bill of Rights begins, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Yet the Obama administration has displayed a disturbing contempt for the religious liberty guaranteed in that Bill of Rights. The message coming out of them seems to be, it's okay to have religious beliefs as long as you confine their practice to your church. They just don't get it. They don't seem to grasp the fact that our faith is part of who we are. We don't check it in and check it out when we walk into our places of worship. We take it with us everywhere we go. Now, defenders of this health mandate are attempting to play a clever political game. They're attempting to frame this as a narrow debate between women's rights and the Catholic Church. The truth is, this is about an outrageous idea that the state can force citizens of this nation to violate their religious beliefs by some decree or regulation, and that some bureaucrat at Health and Human Services can violate constitutional rights. All Americans, as individuals, not just religious institutions, should be free to purchase and provide health insurance that does not violate their religious beliefs. This principle is so basic that it's tragic that we even have to introduce legislation to reaffirm it. But it's the position of the Obama administration that's put us in the position we're in today. That's why I'm a proud co-sponsor of the Rights of Conscience Act, and I urge its swift passage. Mr. Chairman, I yield back.
Well, the congressman served his people, served his country, and I just have to say he ended his life on this earth very well, and have no doubt he's in heaven smiling now, and his body is completely healed. And I just want to say thank you to Alan Nunley, and thank you to his family that means so much to him and means so much to us. And we're going to keep you in our prayers. And thank you, our listeners, to listen to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. Next week, we will have best-selling author Jonathan Kahn. And we'll talk some more politics, too. So be sure to tune in next week. Tell your friends and neighbors, and we'll see you then.
Thanks for joining us today, and remember to listen again next week for another edition of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You can order Ed's new book, Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, Tea Party versus the Status Quo, by clicking on the book cover right in front of you on the screen. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.